Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Already considered one of the most critically acclaimed suspense writers of our time, bestselling writer Gillian Flynn's latest, Gone Girl, is unputdownable, about a marriage gone terribly, terribly wrong. Gone Girl's toxic mix of sharp-edged wit and chilling prose creates a nerve-fraying thriller that confounds you at every turn. On a warm summer morning in North Carthage, Missouri, it is Nick and Amy Dunn's fifth wedding anniversary. Presents are being wrapped and reservations are being made when Nick's clever and beautiful wife disappears from their rented McMansion on the Mississippi River. Under mounting pressure from the police and the media, as well as Amy's fiercely doting parents, the town golden boy parades an endless series of lies, deceits, and inappropriate behavior. Nick is oddly evasive, and he's definitely bitter, but is he really a killer? A former television and pop culture critic for Entertainment Weekly magazine, Gillian Flynn is also the author of the novels Dark Places and Sharp Objects. It is a great pleasure to welcome Gillian Flynn to The Book Show.
Thanks for having me.
I have to say that this book is something that I've been looking forward to for a long time. I love your work. I've loved your work from Sharp Objects to Dark Places and now Gone Girl. I read the book over the weekend, and it is simply, I think, a thriller masterpiece. And I don't know how you feel about it at this point, in the sense of when you get done with something like this, is there a sense that you have done something that is some of your finest work?
Wow. Well, first of all, thank you very much. That is very kind words. It took me a long time to write this book. I will tell you what, it did not come easy. And there was a lot of writing and rewriting and sobbing. What am I doing? And what I turned in, I was really happy with. And I think that's no matter whatever happens, if you as an author can look at something and say, this is the book I tried to write, and here it is, you're in a good place.
How much was the idea to write about marriage, to write about a relationship?
You know, that is exactly what I started with. I wasn't entirely sure what shape it was going to take, but I knew that I wanted to write about marriage. In my first two books, the main characters were decidedly unattached to the point that they had trouble forming basic human relationships of any sort. And I wanted to kind of write about the opposite of that, of what happens when you make that decision to, you know, yoke yourself to someone for the rest of your life and share a life together, and what happens to that. And in this case, bad things happen. But to me, it kind of plays on that idea of no one knows what happens in other people's marriages. And it takes that to that next step, which is, do we even know what's going on in our own marriages sometimes? You know, how do you really know another person?
And it brings up the thing about, you're absolutely right, nobody knows what's going on in a marriage. And as you say, bad things happen. But everything is really entirely plausible in this, isn't it?
I hope so. I definitely strive for that. There's always a little bit of that heightened reality to my books a little bit. But I definitely want it to be based in, you know, actual police procedure, actual media procedure, and certainly those two play an element to how the story itself unravels. But I wanted to feel very based in actual human beings, and to have them be two recognizable people, and to have their marriage, as much as it goes off the rails to a tragic degree, to be a recognizable marriage.
Let us talk about the two characters and begin. It's Nick and Amy Dunn, and let us begin with Amy, because Amy is the amazing Amy. She was the subject of a series of children's books that her parents wrote that were very successful, and she grew up of some privilege and is a very interesting character. How did you want to characterize Amy?
I knew that I wanted them, actually both of them, to be writers of a sort, because I wanted to play with that idea of self-mythology and the fact that, especially in this day and age, that we are all expected to have our own created narrative, our own interesting, fascinating backstory, and to package ourselves in a way, because we see that done with everything now. You know, there's no sports story, there's no human interest story that doesn't have this really perfect, you know, beginning, middle, ending. That kind of changes how we come to relationships, because we sort of come as this package that we're giving to the other person instead of letting them figure us ourselves out. So I wanted them both to be writers. And I definitely wanted Amy to have grown up as a child of privilege, as an incredibly adored child. She was helicopter parented before that phrase even existed, and was always kind of nurtured and taken care of. And this idea that having been an icon early on, having this alter ego on paper that her parents could kind of create and constantly reform, and she was forced to try to catch up with to a dangerous degree, what that did to her, what that did to her personality growing up.
And also, you talk about the helicopter nature of her parents. Both her parents were psychologists as well, which is interesting in and of itself. And they become very central and fascinating characters within the body of the story.
They become very involved in the case because, of course, they immediately swoop in. They've come from New York to the little Missouri hometown where Nick has taken Amy after they've both lost their jobs and where Amy disappears. And they are very much poking and prodding and invasive, obviously the way parents should be when their child goes missing, but they have a very particular way about pushing all of Nick's buttons in a certain way. Nick kind of idolizes Amy's father as the father he didn't really have, and he's a bit in awe of them both and wants to please them, but at the same time, he resents them looking too closely into their marriage.
Nick was a writer for a popular journalist who wrote both television and popular culture reviews and features, much like you did for a long, long time. So, and he gets fired, much like you did.
Right.
From entertainment.
I prefer layoff.
You were let go.
I was let go. Once I decided that they're going to be writers, I kind of liked having fun with that a little bit, that Nick, I wanted him to be very savvy about what was happening to him once the media descended on this story. And of course, it's the story that was perfectly made for, you know, TV audiences and people to true crime addicts to get addicted to. And I wanted him to be very savvy about what's going on. He's also a person who sees everything through a bit of a remove of the pop culture lens, which enables him to constantly kind of make a movie reference or TV reference to almost anything that's happening. We've all seen so many cop shows by now that as he's going through this experience, and we don't know whether or not he did do away with his wife, but we certainly know that he is not processing this tragedy the way a normal human being probably should, because he's been so saturated by movies and TV for so long that he doesn't quite know how to have a genuine reaction to what's happening to him. And I think that's a problem that we all have a little bit these days, that idea that our first reaction is often something, a line that we've gotten from TV or movies and that kind of thing. And so it was playing a little bit with that, just that what happens when you become a little too engrossed in pop culture.
The chapters are alternating. Nick and Amy both tell their stories and from their perspectives. You wanted to do that from the very beginning? Was that the thought of how you would tell the story?
I don't think I had it in the early draft that way. I think I knew it was going to be Nick's story and that he was someone that we weren't sure if we could trust, and we weren't sure what he had done with his wife who was missing. But I had put so much thought into who Amy was, and he talked so much about her, that I just had to try to figure out a way to get her in the story first. So she enters the story already missing, but we get to hear her voice through her journal entries. I got very attached to Amy. She's got a very big voice, and I had to give her some room.
And it is that voice that what I find fascinating about the book, and I will say at very early in this program that this is a very difficult book to talk about because you don't want to give anything away. But I do have to say that as we learn more about Amy, as we learn more about Nick, what is so wonderful about your writing is that these become two completely separate, wonderful characters. And that, to me, is the great accomplishment in this of just how defined and fresh these characters are, as opposed to one writer yourself writing from two vantage points and both of them kind of sounding alike.
Oh, well, thank you. That was, the big concern when you're doing two voices and two voices in the first person. You don't want any draining into each other. So it took a lot of adjusting and, making sure that I wasn't giving someone a line just because I liked it, but that it was because it sounded like that person. And that's, it's a key part of the book. These are two very different people with very different ideas about what marriage is and what their marriage is. And as Nick says at one point, what is marriage but one endless he said, she said story? And so that's what this is.
Amy has a line in the book, I think, that it says basically describing Nick, the Nick that she has, but describing the Nick that she wants is basically being a sea lion. and I just thought that was a great description of sort of, you want something just happy and fun.
And that's sort of what that early courtship is. You're both so thrilled to have found each other, and you're both so naturally happy because you're together, you found your soulmate, this wonderful thing. And of course, as time goes by, you have to learn that there are also challenges and troubles and issues in a marriage. And if you are a person who can work through that, then you can make a really wonderful marriage. If you're not a person who is not capable of figuring that out, then you're in for a very, very rough time.
Gillian Flynn is the author of the new novel, Gone Girl. It is published by Crown. How much did the first two books, Sharp Objects and Dark Places, influence this one in the sense of the type of writer that you knew you wanted to be?
I don't consciously look at the previous book when I'm doing the next book. I learned the hard way at Dark Places that is a very dangerous thing to do, because I'd originally started to write that narrator in response to Sharp Objects, and I didn't want to write another dark, troubled female character. And so I'd written her, and the entire first draft is this awfully cheerful, optimistic, stable personality, and I hated her so much. And I finally got to the point that I realized we had to fix it and had to go back and do a lot of rewriting. So I actually tried to not think at all of the previous ones, but certainly this narration is more complex, the twists are more complex, so just my experience of writing the previous two books have certainly helped me do this one.
When you discover that voice of that character and finally figure out, okay, this is how I want Amy to sound and this is what I want Nick to say, do you write back and forth?
I did write back and forth. Yeah, I did not do just Nick all the way through or Amy all the way through. I did alternate back and forth because I'm kind of more of a chronological writer. I don't like to write scenes out of place very often. And I have enough of a disorganized mind to begin with that to have to try to hopscotch back and forth in the chronology. So I did write them back and forth. And once I figured out their voices, I didn't have too much trouble with any sort of creep in tone between one or the other. I was able to, they became very, very different and very specific people to me. And I kind of knew how each of them would react and the kinds of things they would think and say. So it took a lot of upfront work to make sure I knew who they were. But after that, it went very smoothly, surprisingly.
It is troubling, having met you and having read your work, that it seems to me that that you think this way. I
You should talk to my husband.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Does something like this, I mean, change or because it is so intense and you write so convincingly and beautifully about the ups and downs of a marriage, does it present any discussions between the two of you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and thankfully that's what kind of informs a lot of the book is that I have a husband who I can talk to very frankly about these things. I mean, it takes a pretty kind spouse where you can go to him and say, honey, I'm going to write an incredibly dark book about the worst side of marriage and have him say, oh, that sounds great. Do it. Go for it. He was very understanding about the whole thing. And, you know, certainly we're those kind of couple that if we have a fight, when we're done, we immediately reverse engineer and try to figure out why we said certain things or thought certain things. And he's a lawyer, so he likes to pick things apart as much as I, a former journalist, do. And so it's definitely an ode to him that I was able to even write this book and get inside a guy's head, too, because I definitely ran a lot of things by him. You know, would this, you know, this man sound manly enough?
When you got the story down and figured it out, so much of the hallmark of what you have written over the past three novels is these twists and turns and really, you know, scaring the zippers or surprising the zippers off of us of things that happen along the way. How planned are they?
Very unplanned. I wish I could say that I am one of those wonderful writers who organize everything and have it all outlined and figured out, but I knew one initial twist, and everything else I really even wasn't sure what was going to happen. I'm always a writer who will be about 30 pages from the end of the book and be typing along thinking, I wonder how this is going to end. what will I write? And then I figure it out and kind of go back and do several rewrites so that all the clues are in place and that it feels, you know, more smooth. But I've not figured that out yet, how to actually sit down and know from beginning to end what's going to happen in my book. But that's partly because I'm more interested in the character. They're driven by that than actual police procedural or the whodunit. I'm usually more interested in digging into poking around in people's psyches. So I have to kind of figure out where they're going to lead me. That sounds very authory, but it actually is true.
Mm. There's such humor in the books, and there is such an offhanded humor and a wit in the telling of the story from both perspectives of both Nick and Amy. And I'm curious as to how much of did you find your own voice in one of these characters, perhaps more than another?
They each have a little part of me. I mean, I'm from Missouri. I kind of felt like I made it in the big city when I came out to New York and got my job at Entertainment Weekly, and had the ego of losing the job, and so that part of Nick is very much me. And, you know, Amy, I definitely have the streak of that super alpha female sometimes, not to her extent, but can kind of channel that too. So I have a little bit of that kind of a little bit of the good old Missouri boy in me and a little bit of the hyper alpha girl in me. I sound like a sociopath now, but
but there are those two sides to, obviously, Amy is very much a city girl. Nick is from Missouri. And so that gives you a chance to explore the differences between these places and the impact that geography has on us as human beings.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's something that's kind of hard to get around. I mean, you especially if you grew up in one particular place. I was born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri, and went to school at University of Kansas, and so and definitely much a product of right smack in the middle of the heartland. And I remember coming to New York and meeting, you know, people from the East Coast. I don't think I felt like a rube, but I felt, you know, it was definitely a different way of thinking, a different way of acting. I definitely remember that kind of culture shock and being very wowed by East Coast people. They spoke so much faster.
I noticed you also write a lot about the media in your work and the impact that they have on how these characters react to situations. Much of this book has the media breathing down the necks of these characters, and also these characters very interested and concerned how the media is portraying them and how they will portray themselves to the media. And it seems to be a theme of your work, and I assume a lot of that comes from being a reporter.
Yeah, I'm spent, you know, about 15 years in the media, and not on the broadcast side, but on the print side, and certainly know that idea of the artifice of presenting yourself as, you know, in a certain image and that kind of thing. And to me, the rise of all these true crime shows and this the packaging of tragedy as this sort of a consumable horror that we're meant to enjoy in a way, you know, that we're meant to be attracted to and interested in, and you know, that everyone's cast immediately in their roles, whether it's fair or not. So there's always the beautiful missing wife, and there's always the husband who is kind of immediately assumed to be guilty. And that was definitely something I was interested in, whether or not Nick is guilty. What does it do to you to have the entire country interpret everything you do as slightly villainous? And how does that change your reaction? How does that change how you feel about yourself, even?
You do have a Nancy Grace type character in this book. Do you like the fact that we have a Nancy Grace on the scene, or does that bother you?
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting question. I'm very torn, but because, like I said, I'm fascinated with true crime myself, and I'm always drawn in by certain big cases, and you can't argue with the fact that sometimes that extra media attention does get certain cases solved. I mean, I think it's a very natural thing also that we are become fascinated by these crimes, because it's our own way of figuring out who we are and, you know, how our families work, and insight into how husbands and wives relate to each other, mothers and daughters relate to each other. And I think we're fascinated because it's a big look behind the closed doors of other people's lives and whether or not ours seems similar to it. Because the cases we always become fascinated with are, you know, the cases where crime happens to a family that you think shouldn't have happened to. And that's why we can identify with that. So to me, it's a very human response. Now, when it comes down to the point where someone is immediately vilified and cast in, like I said, in a certain role, I think that's a very dangerous thing.
For the people involved in the case, they are also aware of what is, as I said before, of it is sort of they are reacting to what is being said on the air.
Mm-hmm. And you know, yeah, and there definitely is a certain pride among them that their case becomes famous. You know, that they are interesting enough people that they are worthy of this national attention. And of course, for Amy's parents, who wrote this iconic book series and created this iconic character, Amazing Amy, they kind of expect nothing less. Of course, the world should continue to be interested because they have created this own character, their own persona, aside from even their daughter. And in a way, it brings this fame back to them that they had lost as the book series had become less and less popular. So there's a strange pride in enjoying this attention on this tragedy that's unavoidable, because you want that attention so you can get the word out. But at the same time, it definitely puts a spotlight on you, and you have to act in a certain different way than you would be able to if you were just mourning privately.
You spoke a moment ago about how 30 pages out, you didn't know how this was going to end. And the ending is chilling. The last two sentences are absolutely chilling.
Thank you.
Did they come at the end, or did you at some point know this is how it has to conclude?
I will admit, I played around with several different endings. I wasn't in, you know, that last chapter, I just wasn't sure how I wanted it to end. But then once I decided, yeah, that I immediately that last line of the book came into my mind, and I thought, I'm done.
That sounds good.
I'm done. I can close the laptop.
Well, the new novel is Gone Girl, the follow-up to both Sharp Objects and Dark Places. The book is published by Crown. Gillian Flynn, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I wish you all the luck in the world. And again, I thank you for several sleepless nights. It's a great pleasure.
Thank you.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. You can bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.